All right, here we are back, the Most High Show.
Yes.
This episode is an episode we haven't done in a while, so it's nice and refreshing.
Yes.
We're gonna have somebody on here in the decadent love seat of service.
Amen.
And he's going to be sharing his story. And, you know, the way we do it is a general rule. Mm-hmm. It's more like a guideline because we're more like pirates and misfits than we are real people. But the guideline is once you get a year, we want to hear that story. And I don't know what's the magic about a year, but I think that
it's a rotation, man.
Yes.
It's the rotation of the earth. It's the earth.
Yeah. Is the earth really rotating, or is that just our calendar?
It's one revolution.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
When you get a year.
Yeah. So there's that.
That's big. Yeah.
But also, I think that time takes time.
Yes.
And it takes time to realize who you are, to heal, to become, to let go of all these old patterns and frameworks that we had. And usually about a year is when that magic starts to happen and the click starts coming in. And so we have a new friend of the show here, Brother Shane.
Yeah. What's up, man?
What's going on, brother?
And also we got David co-hosting.
You know it.
Quality control, Leslie. On the ones and twos, we got Jacob. And Crystal's here just bird dogging us.
Holding it down.
Sure,
yeah.
We don't mess this
holding
up.
It down. Yeah. Keeping it in line.
Pulling the string.
Oh, you're going to use that against her now.
I know.
I'm a balloon. I'm trying to float here. You're dunking me down, man. Yeah.
We were talking about how in every relationship there's a balloon and there's a string.
Yeah. Right.
One person is usually the string and one person is usually the balloon. And I'm the string in my relationship. And
I too.
After witnessing the conversation, we determined that Crystal's the string in Shane's relationship.
Yeah.
It's good money.
So what we like to do here is we like to start off with what's going on now. What's a day in the life like for you today? Kind of give the audience an idea of who they're talking to right now.
Oh, man. A day in my life today. It's pretty good. I mean, I work. Work hard. And, you know, come home to my wife and, you know, play my game.
I don't know, man, but, you know, so I don't know you very well. I've seen you a couple of times, but I watch you guys on social media, and at least from an observer on a Facebook platform, you guys are really involved. Like, you guys is always doing, like, a sober celebration. I don't know. I think there was a kayak or something like that. You guys are very, and I was telling Crystal the last time she was here that how much I love seeing, like, and it looks like you got a good crew.
Yeah.
Which I think is very important, too.
Most definitely.
And I like that. So do you do, like, you know, are you AAN, NAN? Like, are you in, like, as you said before we got on camera, men's group and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
what's definitely that life about?
Oh, man. You know, I've finally found a balance with my meetings. But, you know, I attend regular AA meeting, CMA meeting. And I have a men's group home meeting we go to every Thursday. Just a group of men. Not 12-step based there, you know, but just a group of us men that
fellowship.
Yeah, you know, going through what we go through in life as men. You know, we're like, right now we're working on emotions. What men are, you know, how we could channel our emotions. And you know, your stereotypical male was always raised as you're scary or you're less than to show emotion, which is a bunch of BS, you know, and so we're going through that right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So you work.
Yeah.
You come back home after work.
Yeah, come home.
And you play the video game.
Yeah.
And you chill out.
I chill out.
But something tells me it wasn't always like that.
Nah, it wasn't always like that, man. I would go to work, but, you know, I'd come home and push my wife off and sneak around and get high, drinking, smoking weed, popping pills, you know, behind her back, you know, living that double life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough, right, that double life?
It is. It's very tough.
Well, yeah. I think it's cool to point out, too, that both of you guys are in recovery. So the dynamic of that is something within itself, right? You know, it's not like nobody's naive to your moves, right? Because she made her own moves. You know what I mean? So like living a life of recovery and one's relapsing, you know, one's trying to be straight or, you know, vice versa or whatever, that kind of makes the whole thing, kind of have its own, you know, its own dynamic, I would say. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, yeah, it's definitely, you know, early on, she would be further along in her recovery and she was kind of naive to what I had going on, but you know, once things unfolded, you know, and just got open with it and honest with her and, you know, and everyone else around me, like, this is what it was, this is what was going on. So,
yeah,
you know, now I don't have to live like that anymore.
Yeah, man, that's a blessing, dude.
So when did drugs and alcohol really take off in your life and become a solution in your life, when it became a thing?
Shoot, man. It really took hold of my life at a very young age. Like, you know, I'm from Orlando, Pine Hills, so from the west side of Orange County. And, like, all my family, you know, sold dope, you know. You know, my father had went away at a very young age, and so I was with my mother and my stepdad, but, you know, they were alcoholics and addicts as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, my older cousins would sell them weed and all their drugs. So, you know, I idolized that from the very beginning. So I'm had to say, like, I started smoking weed at, like, 9, 10, because my mom was already out open smoking crack and, you know, my stepfather finally had enough and took off. And my house just became the, you know, the neighborhood crack house.
Mm-hmm. Spot.
Yeah, it was a spot.
Yeah. You being, you know, raised in it, right?
Yeah, I was raised in it. You know, I learned really early on in life, like, where I'm from is either you're going to sell dope, gangbang, and rob.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the life that I wound up taking at a very young age. Yeah, I mean, it just went from there, and, you know.
Now you took that on because it's kind of what you're being shown.
Yeah.
Right? It's the.
Yeah, my mama was, you know, like I said, my mama was a smoker for 25 years. So my mama had been started smoking crack when I was real young.
Yeah.
And by this time, like, my cousins were selling powder and weed, and he always told me, like, hey, you know, you really ain't gonna make no money selling weed, but you can make a lot of money selling powder. And I just was like, he taught me how to do that, just watching out. And, you know, at the trap house, while him selling powder, I'd be the watch out man. And then, you know, I was very young, but I was shown that the way the OGs pulled them aside was like, you know, he'll take the pistol and the drugs and the cops ain't gonna do nothing but slap them on the wrist.
Right.
You know, so I just started, you know, selling powder at a young age. By 11, I was selling powder. 12, I was already snorting powder. And, you know, my mom, you know, they're my best friend, but, like, where I learned how to cook crack out on a spoon was my mama, you know? So that's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wanted to smoke crack in her house, so I had to sell crack.
Yeah.
That's just what it was.
I sound like a motherfucking cartoon, dog. Like, just a fucked up HBO cartoon.
Facts.
Of, like, just crazy shit. I mean, first time I did cocaine, I took it from my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely.
So what do you think you picked up in living in that, growing up in that environment, right? Because now you got some time of healing that you've been through a lot of this, right? I imagine you've.
Yeah.
And also, brother, you know, you're going to be unpacking this shit for a long time too. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I know that you had to have come to some kind of peace and understanding about how you grew up, to make it past a year. Right.
Yeah.
So what do you know now about your childhood? What did you have to let go about that you know now that's helping you stay sober?
Shoot, man, that, you know, I had to let go of that lifestyle, that ego and everything that came along with it. Like, you know, at one point I idolized that and everything that came with it. So I had to let that go. And, you know, I know now that don't get you nowhere.
Mm.
Dead or in prison. You ain't going to never get ahead. You know, there's like a 1% of people that make it selling drugs.
Right.
I wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
But letting that go and knowing that, you know, I am an addict. I had to come to the realization that I had a problem.
Yeah.
And I had to let that go. Because if I didn't, you know, I'd continue on in that path.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you had to change your whole philosophy of life.
Yes.
Right?
Like, oh, yeah.
What does success mean? What does being good mean? What does being good at something mean?
Mm.
What does being nice mean?
Right.
What does being sweet mean? You know what I mean? Like, what is love?
Yeah.
Like, come on. You know, you live in that lifestyle, man. It is, you know, you in particular. It's if you're being raised in it, you're not just being raised with, like, you know. Cause I'm very familiar with this, right? You're not just being raised with parents that are addicts. Okay, you are exposed, and every time you turn left, you turn right. The exposure of a whole lifestyle is right in front of you. So how are you gonna buy shoes,
right?
How you gonna get a fresh shirt?
Right.
It's not going to McDonald's. Like, who's going to McDonald's? He's going to give you a pack.
Yeah.
Okay. He's going to tell you, you're going to learn the mathematics of what an ounce of this is worth.
Right.
And I'm going to make this much.
Right.
And that's your life.
Yeah.
And then you get booked or something, like something happens and somebody's telling you, no, that's not the way. What is the other way? I don't know no other way.
Right.
What, watching a sitcom or something? You know?
Right.
It's deep.
Yeah.
So when has there been a point over this last year that you realize that growing up like that ain't normal?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely knew it wasn't normal.
Yeah.
But like David said, like, I had to change my perspective on life.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I always felt like the world owed me something. The world owed me and everybody owed me. So that was my outlook. But when I changed that outlook and I realized that don't nobody owe me nothing, the world don't owe me nothing.
Mm.
You know, I have to put out what I get. You know, I'm going to get what I put out into the universe.
Yeah. Yeah, which ain't right. It ain't fair, right? Because you're kind of, because like coming in from that kind of traumatic upbringing in life, because as you're formulating, you know, a viewpoint of what the world and what God is like and what, you know, and have that be the environment that you're growing up in, you know, that's, you're already starting from kind of a place. But I think like behind a ball a little bit. But this is the thing, though, is the beauty in it is you also know something about life that not everybody knows, right?
Right.
You understand a side to this thing, which could give you really good insight now as you work with other men, as you be helpful with somebody, walk alongside them, because you can understand what that's like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's like the celebration of having 1 year sober.
Yeah.
Because, man, you know a lot that a lot of people don't know. And, like, what you give back in service is more than just, you know, not just, but it's more than, you know, pushing in the chairs. Not, there's nothing wrong with pushing in the chairs and emptying the ashtrays. I'm not saying that's a good service work, but you got something more to offer, something else to offer, you know?
Heck yeah, dude. We got all of our fire alarms, tens and above, we're calling you, bro. You're the new, we got a live one here. Get Shane on the phone.
Weep, weep, Shane.
Yeah.
We got one.
So, so that's growing up. And then tell me about, like, as you get into your teens and young adult, like, what's your relationship life with drugs and alcohol?
And, you know, I had two other aunts, you know, that I grew up with in my teen years. You know, one of them was where my cousin, his mother, and then I had my other aunt. Like, so I had like the street aunt and I had the church aunt.
Mm.
So I kept, you know, I played sports in high school, and I used to get in so much trouble. Like, I'd get tossed from one aunt to another. So I mean, I got to live a life of the streets of what I loved, and then I had to go over here and live with my aunt Cindy and like go to church. So that's where I found like the church thing, and you know, but yeah. I never really clicked with those people.
That was probably like your punishment. You keep it up. Yeah. You're gonna go over. You want to wait till Sunday comes.
Yeah. But man, I high school, like my teen years was full of drugs, cocaine, and you know, ecstasy was a big thing coming up in the 90s, and crank and
crank boy, yeah. Or someone called crank in Georgia.
Yeah, it was a big thing in Florida. So
that's what we called in California, in Bakersfield, crank.
I wind up getting in trouble in school. I just showing out. I took a couple of zips of powder to school and wind up getting told on in school. And basically, I was led to the principal's office and was given the ultimatum, like, either you leave school or I'm calling truant's office. We both know what's in the backpack. You're right. So I got up and left.
Mm.
No questions asked, never returned to school. And then, you know, that's...
How old were you at that point?
Shit. I was 16.
Yeah.
Because and then I jumped off into the streets real hard then, and, you know, gang banging, and, you know, ultimately led me some life altering, you know, circumstances led me to prison at 16.
Mm.
So I went to I got bound over at 16 as an adult, stayed in the county jail until I was 17, until they could send me to prison. So, yeah, like I said, I had caught some really bad charges, and which were violent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, the people don't take too kindly, you hurting people.
Right.
And whether you say it was my life or yours or just whatever the circumstance may have been, they sent me up the road for 5 years. So I went up the road, and I did my time and got out.
Man, but at 16, you start doing a stay pit at 16. Now you're being raised by something else. Right. Now this other whole pivotal part of your influential life is being raised by a whole different thing, man. That's wild.
I'll tell you what, Jacob is 17.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's listening to us. He's not making eye contact
at all.
Because he will never be able to complain again.
Yeah, it's you know.
Well, tell me, so let's get, because that's a great point. Like, mm-hmm. What, 17 years old and getting put into that environment, were the inmates, other inmates in there, did they, like, you know, respect the fact that you were 17 and show you, like, some love, or what was that like?
No, I got sent to Brevard CI. And that's one of the worst prisons in Florida for juveniles. And it was gladiator school. I went in.
So you were tried as an adult, convicted as an adult, but you didn't get put into a prison with like men who were 30 in their 30s or something.
Well,
like
17
that.
To 25.
Oh, shit. So
what they do is, like, if you come in as a young offender, which is really bad, okay, because then they divide you, they section you off into the young people prison, not jail.
Yeah.
So you're doing all these people are a lot of minors that get tried as an adult and they go to prison, but they go to the young boy prison where it is yard out every single day. Mm. Meaning you are fighting, gang banging. Nobody, it's no OGs there to be like, yo, keep the peace, be smart about it. Yo, young man, young buck, come over here. Wow. Everybody's getting it every day.
Yeah.
It's the most violent place to be.
It was pretty intense. You know, it's, they section it off, you know, north, east, south, and west, and in prison in Florida. So me, I was from Central Florida. So, and we, I mean, being from where I'm from, we, you know, there's pretty large group of inmates that were all from the same neighborhood. So, you know, it's not really all your typical. They had a lot of, you know, other name gangs, but like normally you just, we all claim where we from. And so, but it was, you know, just molding you into, I mean, once you hit that spot, like he said, you're just being molded into a gladiator to go on to the next phase of the penitentiary. That's what it is, just fighting and stabbing, just all out.
Becoming like a good inmate. Like, well, I interviewed a guy, he went to prison for murder, burglary, kidnapping at 18. And he spent 42 years in California. 10 of them was in the shoe. And that's how he talked about it. He said about learning how to be a good inmate. That's the real deal. That's why I didn't learn. Yeah, I learned how to be a good inmate, a stand-up dude.
Yeah.
Because those are different rules, right? Yeah, so here you are, 17, 18 years old. And up until this point, everything in your surrounding, your environment, has told you that life is one way.
Yeah.
It's a pretty freaking miracle you're sitting right here right now with us.
Tell me about it, man.
Come on. Like,
it's a blessing. It's a blessing.
We ain't even in the 20s yet.
Yeah. So I most definitely, I finished out my bid and I was released at 21. At this time, my dad had finally been released from prison because he had been locked up my whole life. So, you know, my dad's done did 27 years, and got out and went back and got out. So he had got out by I turned 21 and married my stepmom and back down in the neighborhood again. And I got out and I wasn't out. Like, literally, I got picked up from prison and it was just nothing. Everything was the same as when I left. Same people picked me up, the same stuff. I was given the same stuff. They put me some, brought me clothes, took me to the house party. We had a block party, and I wasn't out of 45 minutes out of prison 45 minutes and a shoebox full of money and dope. Already snorting powder again. Just the way of it.
Yeah.
What else is he gonna do?
Yeah. That was
where it. Else is there to go?
Right.
Yep. You don't even know nobody else. You got one auntie, you know, it's in the congregation.
Yeah.
It's tough, man.
Yeah.
Well, this is a common American story, right? I mean, this is why people get locked back up and they get locked back up and they get locked back up because
statistics.
Because the reality is even if you had any kind of life changing efforts in prison, when you're getting out and you're going right back into a culture that doesn't value a way of life, you know, like that, right?
Definitely not to keep you out. Life. Yeah, not to keep you out. It's set up to put you back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your life is set up to go back
or
die.
Yeah. Like, like I say, I got out and went right back at it. And by this time now, I've already made a name where I'm from. And it was just like now it's my ego's done been elevated. And
Nino Brown up in this joint.
Yeah, like I'm like in my train of thought then was, you know, it's I'm who it is, and that's what's going to be. And so I wind up getting back to it, and I met a buddy. He's dead now due to gang violence, but he was from Atlanta. So I wind up, shooting back and forth from Atlanta to Orlando a lot, and I wind up meeting my first baby mother, and
did you like to change the scenery when you came up to Atlanta?
Yeah, cause, I mean, you're going straight to the bluff, so it really wasn't much change. Oh, you know what I'm saying? So
just different bodies.
Just different bodies. Yeah. Same thing going on. But yeah, I wind up mixing around with several different women and winded up over the course. So I only stayed out 28 months, pretty much. And I wind up getting mixed in with some people up here. I wind up having 3 kids on the run up here. And I wind up getting mixed up with some people up here with some illegal gambling houses. I really wasn't doing much drugs at that time. You know, I was just road running. and got mixed up with some people in with these illegal gambling houses, and which, yeah, ultimately turned out to be a fiasco. When I was up here 19 days, and this is now moved in like May 2009, so I was at like 23 at the time, so 21 to 23. I'm about to be 24. So I started, you know, robbing these gambling houses, man, all around Middle Georgia. And some things took a turn for the worst. Wind up, you know, getting the GBI and the U.S. Marshals and everybody after me, and wind up getting caught in 19 days.
Yeah, man.
Then I went to county jail, and so I sat in the county jail for like 11 months with a life and 20 sentence hanging over my head.
Wow.
Before they, before, you know, my family got together and got an attorney to help me get my life back. Mm. So, which was a blessing.
So you get out of this.
So you beat it?
Nah, I went up the road for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So I got out May 19th, 2019. Yeah. Up here, so 2009 to 2019, I spent up here in Georgia, mm-hmm. in prison. And that's where, like, my gang affiliation really took flight. But the whole time I was locked up, you know, I went in with the mindset that I had when I left Florida prison, predator prey.
Right.
And I went in with the mindset of, you're not going to prey on me. I'm going to arise in whatever I need to arise in and adapt to whatever environment I'm in. Mm-hmm. And that's what I done. But the whole time, you know, I was strung out on meth real bad in prison. And a lot of bad things, you know, happened in there. But it ultimately helped me make me who I am today. Like, it's crazy. Like, some people say, why do you say that? Like, I have to say that it was a blessing for me to go to road for 10 years. My incarceration saved my life this time. Because Lord knows I should have been dead a long time ago. And, you know, I've been stabbed several times in prison, and been shot, stabbed, a lot of life things happen, and I'm still here. But my incarceration saved my life because I learned something from a very valuable lesson from it.
What'd you learn?
I value my life. Mm. I value my freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that, you know, authority and structure. So, and I had to learn all these things to get me. I feel like I had to learn these things to get me where I'm at today.
Yeah. Man. What you thinking, David?
It's just, you know, honestly, I was thinking about how much I sit around and encourage people not to break the law and go to prison, right? But some, I can't deny the fact that change happens when you got to sit down for a little while, regardless of the environment. You know, you get when you, because the thing, like, I want to change my life, right? When you're on the streets, you're going here and there and trying to get right, it's a fleeting thought, because you go, I mean, I want to change my life, right? And then right here, everybody, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, all the dirt's right here. But whenever you say, I want to change my life, and it's just you.
Yeah.
And you can sit and really think about that. You can start really, like, getting some confidence, getting, like, some sort of plan together, learning things. Somebody can, like, you know, whatever you're hearing, you can choose what you want to hear, you know, in there. And if you get that mindset of wanting to do better and valuing your freedom, you know what I mean? Understanding, like, oh, these dudes can do this to me because this is where I'm at right now. So this is the authority here. If I buck up against that, my time is going to be here longer.
Right.
If I go with the flow here and stay out the way, I'm going to be able to get home. So that's kind of like, you know, in one aspect of your life is very valuable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's extremely valuable. So you got 10 years, you can make a change. And I, but at the same time, I'm not like promoting going to a prison and trying to change your life. That's dumb.
No, I don't like to do nothing. No, I don't like to do nothing I don't want to do for 10 minutes. Though.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I can't even imagine what 10 years would be like of that kind of like consistent. So this is 2019, you get out.
Yeah.
So as now that you know this about that you want to live, right, that you need some structure, you kind of respect a little bit of authority, how does that change? What do you get back into when you get out?
So, man, honestly, I never knew anything about recovery. So, again, one of my best friends, he's dead now. You know, he just recently passed last year. He was my roommate for 3 years, and he's the one he was telling me about recovery in prison. And lo and behold, I had nobody to go to when I got out of prison here. But so he was the one that was telling me about recovery and telling me there's a chance in sobriety. And I was like, man, I don't have nobody or nobody to go to when I get out. And ultimately, he called his sister and told her, and like, hey, you know, my roomie's getting out. And he ain't got nowhere to go. But he wants to get clean, and that's when I learned what the extension was about in Marietta. And he told me, like, when I get out, if I call, they'll pick me up.
That's a beautiful thing, ain't it?
Like, this is where, like, when people show up for people, I actually seen it for the first time. Yeah. And not wanting anything from me.
Right.
That gotta be the thing there. Like, what? Think of his life, and then having nobody, he done messed it all up. Been gone so long that nobody's there to come see you on the other side of this. And then you call somebody in recovery, or not even, you don't even know the people in recovery. That's how valuable this network is, man.
Yes.
Who else is going to pick you up when you burned all your bridges?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And they come and show you that love, dude, you'll never, ever forget that. I don't care if you realize whatever, you won't forget the kind of love that's like shown from the AANA recovery community, bro. That's how it goes down.
It was, and these two individuals are still in my life today, and I love them to death because they showed me that what they showed me, like not knowing me what this is about, to love and give back, and to, you know, and they did, dude. Like I called when I got out. And they were there. I mean, I had got cold feet, you know, especially when I got to the downtown bus station. And, you know, outside of calling them, I called somebody else. And I told them to, you know, meet me at a Walmart or something. And I wound up taking Marta to the damn Camelton Road. And I had used this old lady's phone on the bus. And that was the last number, the last person that seen me in their phone. And I used them and told them that I'd be over at the Walmart off Camelton. And I got off the bus before Walmart to the Boost Mobile store. And again, like, I don't know this girl or this guy that come and pick me. I know it's my buddy Rusty and his sister and his brother, her brother. And I got off and went in the Boost and get me a phone. Because I already had made another call to line something else up. Like, he's like, yo, I'm like, I'm out. Because I have to, you know, I'll replay real quick. Right before I got out of prison, I was telling my roommate and everyone around me that one thing about it, two things for sure, I won't go to no rehab, and I'll never be married. Boy, did God have something else in store. So, yeah, I get off, I go in Boost, and I'm sitting on the floor, man. I'm using this new phone, got it plugged up, trying to, you know, I'm waiting on a buddy of mine to send me his personal Lyft driver from Locust Grove with some drugs and guns. I'm just ready. I'm running. I'm not going here. And out of nowhere, this guy walks into this Boost Mobile store, and I'm sitting on the floor minding my business, and he was like, yo, you Shane? Now I'm like a deer in headlights. Like, yo, No? Who are you? You know, and he was like, yeah, I'm Mackie. No, I'm not ringing no bells, you know? He's like, you Shane? He was like, I'm Trish's brother. Oh. He's like, you Shane, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, getting a phone. He's like, come on out here. So, yeah, I went out there, and I'm like, man, it was just like an epiphany, dude, like how it all happened. God works in mysterious ways because.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, literally right before I got out, I had just been stabbed, and it punctured my lung. And I was just like, the doctor said, you're glad to be alive this time. So I just was like, man, if this isn't a God moment in my life, I don't know what is, because these people just stopped. Like, they just showed up in the nick of time before I made another route.
Yeah.
Guns was in the trunk.
Yeah, they were coming.
On the way.
On the way.
Yeah.
So that's, I went heavy. To the extension.
Yeah. How long did you stay at the extension?
I stayed there 29 days.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Well, hey, you know,
that
come
doesn't
on.
Sound like a completed.
No, it wasn't. I didn't get to the whole year. But again, though, with that.
But that's a hard shift, though. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's understandable in retrospect, you know, as we sit here in the comfort of the studio, we're talking about it, you know, but it's like, how many years of programming did you have? You know what I'm saying? Like, the world is this way. And then you get put into this, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, there was.
For real program.
There was like.
For real program. That was probably the longest 29 days of your life, probably.
But it was the best 29 days of my life.
Yeah. Okay.
There was like, even now there's people, there was like wages bet against me. Like, even at that time, the director of that time was like, asked the person that brought me, like, are you serious? Like, do you know what you're asking us to do? Like, this dude just did 10 years. Like, there's no way this is not going to work. And I did not leave voluntarily. There was a guy there, you know, and he just, for 2 weeks, man, I did the bigger thing, you know, I told the director and the counselors, I'm like, look, y'all need to get this dude away from me. Y'all get him. Like, I'm tired of it. You can't keep poking at me. I'm trying everything I can here to work this, and y'all need to get this guy. And I came back from work one day. We had an incident at work, and I got back from work, and he was on the back porch shooting his mouth off, and he said something along the lines that he'd slap my bitch, whatever. So I just hauled off and slapped the shit out of him, knocked him off the porch. So I put my hands on him, so I had to leave.
Yeah.
And then it was back out to the real world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is 30 days out. When you leave there, what do you get into?
Shoot. So I wind up meeting a chick through a dude that was there. I had got a hotel. I went to a sober living, but I'm already on active felony probation for a violent crime. So I paid the money to go into a sober living, and the next day I went to work, and I was calling my probation officer, letting her know, like, oh, I got an address change. I'm trying to do the right thing. And she was like, she got the address, and I mean, a couple hours went by, and she called me back. She was like, you can't stay there. There's already people in there on probation. You're on active violent probation. You can't stay there. So I'm like, it is what it is then. I'm gone. So I took flight. I went and got a hotel room over in Marietta. And like I said, I had met this girl. And that was a very interesting time in my life. I never dibbled and dabbled with heroin. That wasn't my thing. I was steady working for like 4 days after I, you know, finally left. But after 4 days, it was like, this is all pointless to me.
Because you're already on the run, basically, again.
Well, I wasn't even on the run yet. I even called and told them, I told my probation officer, look, I'm getting a hotel room. They're like, shit, that's fine.
Oh, okay.
Don't get in no trouble. So on my first time reporting, I went in there in Cobb County, And shoot, I got to talking and everything with the people, and the lady was like, "We got to. I'm gonna call in my supervisor," and they wanted to. I don't know if they were letting it slip, but they said something along the lines of like, "Mr. Bedford, you know, you are not a cop. You're not on probation in Cobb County. You are on probation in Peach County, which is way down in Middle Georgia, and we can't. They're not wanting to transfer your probation up here, so we're just gonna oversee it. So, really, there's nothing we can do for you. We just needed you to do your first report, we could fax them the paperwork. But there's nothing we could do. We're not gonna see you anymore."
Mm.
So I was like, shit, that was the wrong thing to tell me.
Yeah, that was like,
you know what I mean?
Real?
Yeah, that was the wrong thing you could tell me.
I ain't on parole no more, really. Like, I ain't on parole.
Right.
Long as you're saying as long as I don't get arrested, I don't need to see nobody. So now I can get high. I'm free to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So
So you did?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was right back at it. Yeah.
And you're doing dope now, right?
Oh, I'm back on the ice.
Oh, okay.
So I, like I said, I was with this girl, and I got back selling dope, and to not just, you know, now I'm gotta sell dope so I could have a place to stay, and then not only that, I need you around because you got a car, so now I gotta supply your dope habit, and you're a heroin addict, and that was the worst thing I ever experienced in my life, you know, I don't know. It was just a really rough patch. Started running around with people in Cobb County, and like my mind went back to like chain game mode. Like you're hanging around with a group of people and they're claiming to be all this, but you know, and really in hindsight, they're really not like that. So, but they got the drugs, but they want to tax you. So I'm just going to make it clear, like, you're not who you say you are. I'm gonna just take your shit and punk you out type shit. But I wind up, you know, it was a mistake because they wind up putting the police on me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I did it. I was with this girl again. We did some dope one night, and I felt like I got a hot shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I OD'd. And by now, though, I know I have a warrant for my arrest because I never called down to Middle Georgia. I never did anything else there, so I know. But it's a technical violation, you know, because I just no more reporting, none of that. But so I know now, like, I'm eventually going to get caught. So I OD'd and woke up in Kennestone, and I wasn't handcuffed to the bed. But, you know, a couple nights prior to that, there was some incident happened. It was on the news, and you know, a couple people got away. So, but I mean, you know, the police know what they're doing. So I mean, I woke up without a handcuffs on and stuff, so I just took off and ran back out. I wound up getting caught the next day.
Yeah,
so they wanted you to go ahead and run on out.
Yeah,
right?
They were, because like I said, the incident happened a couple days, you know, the night before. They wind up following. How they did it, I don't know, but they did.
Fucking Pink Panther.
Yeah.
There he is going in the hotel.
Yeah.
He's in.
Yeah, they definitely did, dude. They followed me the next day from Cherokee County into Cobb County.
Yeah.
And as I was getting on 575, they draw down on us.
Wow.
They knew.
Now, in your journey of recovery in this last year, mm-hmm. right, and looking back at these moments in your life and these benchmark defining moments, what do you know now, as you look back and as you share it now, what do you know about them, and how do you reconcile your life today with that?
Man, I just make amends and just keep working this program. Is what got me to this year. Just keep going to meetings and, you know, keeping the network of men that I have around me that hold me accountable. They call me on my bullshit. is what I continue to do. I reflect on my past, but I don't try to brag about it.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely do not idolize that lifestyle anymore. It's a part of my life, but it's not the defining part of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know a lot of your story. So what I'm realizing is, like, this is almost like a fresh year of life, period.
Yeah.
Right? 2023. I mean, the gap isn't too long from, you know, you being a free person and right. dealing with life on life's terms, period. So I know it's a big learning curve that you're probably definitely. Experiencing daily.
This is it why is. He got a PlayStation.
Yeah. Then I just go home and play my game, man.
I just go play my game.
Play my game, man.
Now it makes more sense.
It's a safe haven. It is. But ultimately, man, it without all that, going through all that, I would have not met my wife.
Oh.
Yes. And we did. We met, you know, when I got arrested and got back out. They expedited me and I came back. I ultimately met my wife in active addiction. And she found me out. She searched me out and found me, you know. And for that, I believe that was a God thing then, too. We met in active addiction. And she was telling me, like, yo, you need to go to sober living, dude. You need to go back. And I'm like, nah, fuck that. I ain't going.
Mm-hmm.
And so she told me, like, kept telling me. So I was like, look, if I go, you go. And she sure did, dude. She didn't have to. She could have been staying doing what she was doing, staying at mom's and mm-hmm. getting on her own merry way. But she didn't. She packed her shit and she went with me. We went to sober living. And she worked a program. And I respect her program to, like, the highest, because I learned a lot from her. She's been the backbone of my life, for real, in my recovery. I mean, she's a lot farther along than I am. You know, she does the book work, and she does the outreach, and she's that yeah. one that, you know, I see it. You know, me, I'm like you said, David. This is new to me. Like, I'm having to learn how to be a man, and I'm having to learn about feelings and love and without toxicness, cause, and all that. So,
I mean, I'm looking at you, and I'm like, for real, with, like, absolutely no sarcasm at all, you know, after you tell this story, but y'all is a match made in heaven. And I mean that from, like, the most sincere place, because who else is going to handle you, dog?
Nobody.
You know what I'm saying? Who else is going to deal with you?
Like, nobody.
It's a picture-perfect situation in my eyes, man.
She does. You know she what I is. Mean? She has. But again, man, like...
And I'm sure, like, it's a reciprocate. I'm sure he offers you and gives you so much, you know, for you to keep doing what you're doing. You know what I mean? So I love it, man. I really do. I respect it, too.
So you go to the sober living, but you were saying too that there was a time when you were kind of living that double life, right? So you're doing sober living for a while, I imagine. When's the moment, right, that you just got your year, right? So what happened day before that final kind of...
We went through sober living, right? And I manipulated my way through it, you know, by being loud and whatever. So I would get kicked out of the program all the time, have to go to the hotel. But even, like, when we left sober living, we got our own place and everything. Like, I would just hide everything and just, I mean, I went to work and did all that, and we were able to maintain our everything. But What the straw that broke the camel back was I was eating pills and I was snorting cocaine. And, you know, she told me, like, you just can't drink, or you just can't smoke weed. And you can't. I can't. I'm an addict. I went from weed to drinking to snorting and eating pills.
Yeah.
So I got up one morning and told her, you know, hey, I'm fucking quitting my job. It's over with. Done deal. I'm done. Pack my shit and I'll leave. So I was headed to Atlanta, pulled over, and needless to say, I was calling people and a couple people didn't answer that needed to answer. And I got a couple calls back. So I'm sitting in the gas station, I'm crying, I'm emotional, throwing my life away again. I don't want to, but I am. And one of my best friends, he finally called me back and talked me out of it, because I'm sitting in the gas station looking dope, man. I'm sitting in the car. Like, if I get out of this car and I go over there, I won't, all that will cease to exist. But, my stepmom called me, and finally my best friend told me, look, we'll get you back in sober living, dude. You know, and I went to my mother's for a few days, and I finally went back to sober living this time for my year.
So let's break this down. So you get in the car, you out, you're done. You're heading to Atlanta.
Mad.
Crying.
Yeah.
Tears.
Now you said you got pulled over. You pulled over. You didn't get pulled over by the cops.
Nah.
Okay. You pulled over and you're setting up a deal so that you can start go back to the old way.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. But there's something in you now.
I don't want to. Because I love.
What do you think that was? That was resisting, right? Because you were in there. You were at that moment, right? And how many times have you been in that position where there was no resistance, right? But now, in this very moment, there's something in you that's saying, "No, this isn't the way." What do you think that is?
Man, that was just God for me. That was God on the inside. Because whether you do a year, or you do 10 years. You do anything. If you've tasted, I can't say that I've tasted, but up to today that I've tasted any kind of this recovery. But I've done it this time around wholeheartedly. I don't think I was ever sober when I first met my wife, even when we went to sober living. Like, but I know what the gifts of sobriety will give you.
It's them seeds, man.
All right. I know I've had it around me. I know it'll give you so... I know that, again, for me, my God never will leave me or forsake me.
Amen, brother.
And my insides were pulling. I wanted to get high, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I knew inside that I could rectify it. I could change it if I wanted to. Mm. And I spoke with my wife, and she said, if you go work on yourself. Not, oh, we'll get back together. Go get your shit together. And that's what I done. I went back to sober living, and my sponsor gave me an ultimatum. And this is a man that I value and respect. So I went into sober living, and they told me to focus on myself. And that's what I did. I went and focused on myself. I went and learned who I was. Let's get these things out. Let's work this program. And if it doesn't do shit in 6 months and it don't do nothing, what do you lose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you lose? That shit's always going to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
But over here, if you work it, if you work this program, the gifts are there. And that's what was given back to me. Everything that I threw away, I've been given back tenfold. Mm.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
That's love. Right,
what
there,
step was it for you that, you know, was an impactful, the most impactful?
Character defects.
Seven.
We were just talking about that last night. That's Christian's favorite.
But, you know, it didn't become my favorite until 2 years ago. I didn't get it. But the big thing for me is, I'm going to get emotional about this, because it was that distinction in that seventh step prayer. God, I'm ready for you to have the good and the bad.
Man.
Amen.
And it was the first time in, 10 years that I actually really knew what that meant. Oh, you want all of it.
All of it.
Yeah. So praise God that you figured that out early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, I had a really bad ego problem. And I mean, in my pride, and I'm not to say that I don't struggle with it still at times, I do. But I know that I had to let that go. If not, it would kill me.
Oof.
It would kill me. It would leave you right back to a path of destruction. And I know where that path goes.
Yeah.
So that was that turning point for me. Like, a old head told me in the rooms that eventually this switch will trigger. You know, and I just continue to focus on me and work on me. Like, and it just clicked. Like, I don't care about it. I don't idolize it. You know, I have a set routine, the way I like to do things. And I found a balance in my life and recovery today.
Yeah.
I talk that talk, boy. It's true. It works. It works if you work it. You know?
I love it, man.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
That's it.
Yeah.
These ones that come into this year shit is good because your girlfriend was really kicking that knowledge too when she was sitting over and got her year, right?
Oh, Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa, she caught her year. Yeah. You know, she's bringing in all these anniversaries over here. You know what I mean?
She's the Pied Piper.
Yeah. But it's like rejuvenating to me to hear it talked
it
about.
It is, yeah.
Very fresh. I mean, it very is. Real. You get what I'm saying? Like, damn, that's it.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. No, it means something because I think there is something about when you start getting some time and those days are kind of farther away, you know, it does something to you, I think, you know. And so hearing, you know, your transformation, Shane, in this
hypes
year.
It hypes me up, man, for real.
It does, like, yeah. And it's invigorating.
Like it makes God more real, you know. Yes. It's like, that God is real, man, for real. Like all that divine intervention.
Yeah.
You know, you're telling a true story about how the Lord's, you know, has been affecting your life, man, all this time. You know, that's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. You know? Yeah.
And you said it several times, which is that let go, right? Got give it up. Give just it up. Let go. And it's such a simple concept, but it's also really hard to do.
It is.
Yeah.
But if you're shown, if you want something bad enough and you've been shown the way to do it, you could do it.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's how bad do you want it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's probably what stopped it. It was like you're at this place, you see the dope, man. You crying, your stomach. But see, the difference is, it's like, I got something to lose.
A lot.
If I do this, I really got something to lose. You know what I'm saying? You know you got a wife that loves you. You know what I'm saying? No matter how mad or how hard the tears, like, you know that's gone. I do this.
Yeah.
Let's stop you in your tracks, man. That's divine intervention to me, too. Because you got a life.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? You messed around and acquired the beginning of a life, and you don't want to let that go.
Nah.
For some dope?
Nah,
come on,
not.
Man.
Yeah.
Not no more.
For some dope? Come on. That's crazy talk. Yeah. Well, we're crazy, too. So,
no,
it wouldn't, you know, if you said, and then I picked up and I grabbed it and I got high. I was like, oh, yeah, I know that story, too.
Right.
But I like this one a lot better.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, what message do you have for the person who's out there who is considering this way of life, or maybe they're right in the beginning of this way in life and they're not sure it's going to work? What would you say to that person?
Man, reach out, pick the phone up, get in that work, give it a shot. Give it a shot. I mean, we're quick to give ourselves a shot, but if you dive off into it and give it a shot, it'll change your life. Because if I could do it, you could do it.
Yeah, man.
Anybody could do it. You know? So just jump on out there.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Any final thoughts?
I love this, man. For real. Yeah. Thank you for showing up.
Thank you for showing us. Yeah.
Thank you for bringing a part of your celebration of this, like, you know, this anniversary up, man.
I was slick nervous as hell. All day.
Nah, you did fantastic.
Oh my God.
It was wonderful.
I hope, man, somebody is listening and getting something out of that story right there, bro.
Yeah.
Because just, I mean, you gave it up. God, the fellowship, you know, how that changed your life.
It did.
You know, come on, man.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to The Most High Show.